welcome to Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutford.
Hello.
And this week's special guest, the fifth Sci Guy, Noah Vince.
Hey!
This week we're talking about elusive emotions and tism traits, but first we gotta thank all of our patrons.
Thank you.
Thanks for being a patron, I guess.
It doesn't sound clear that you don't benefit from the Patreon. It just sounds like you're super ungrateful.
First time listener, like, wow, that fifth Sci Guy is really mean. Like, I don't like this one. No, so I've got a question as well before we actually hop into it. Now, if you want to answer this question, look deep inside yourself, look at your emotions, try to see them. And if you can't, that's okay. Ignore all of that and get a chalkboard. Write it on the chalkboard, throw it into the sky. Maybe it'll make national news. Maybe it won't, but I'll feel it and I'll know the answer. The question is, do you have autism and do you experience alexithymia?
Yeah, I think so. I also think it's alexithymia.
It is alexithymia, but athymia sounds better.
Yeah, well, I wrote a song about it like a while ago and I've been just calling it that. And now I feel like when it comes out and I talk about it, people will be like, actually, it sounds better.
The song is out, by the way.
The song is out now, yes.
Stream it along with Noah's album.
Growing up on the internet.
Music videos.
Go stream Noah's music and answer the question down below on YouTube and also on Spotify or Apple, or do the other long thing I said. Anyway, shall we get into the episode?
Please.
So what are emotions? Noah, this question is not for you. Luke, what are emotions?
There's feelings you have, and you don't know where they come from, and you don't know why you have them. But they must be your brain somehow, like, giving you signals, or your gut giving you signals, maybe. Ooh, I'm just trying to preempt the episode.
Yeah, I mean, I would disagree, perhaps, with you don't know where they come from.
I don't know where they come from.
Brain.
Maybe I shouldn't have asked either of you that question.
Brain. Heart.
Just naming organs.
Mm-hmm.
No, so emotions are salient internal states that can promote adaptive behavioral outputs. Does anyone want to hazard a guess at what that means? It's basically what you said, Luke. It is your brain does stuff and makes you feel things to make you do stuff.
Yeah, when I say that people, like, we don't know where they come from, what I mean is many of the people I know have no ability to explain their emotions. they can, but it takes a while, right? So they go like, oh, I think I feel this thing because this thing, and then like maybe this thing, but I don't really know.
Real.
I find it quite easy to understand what makes me feel a thing. You just think about it for a few minutes and then you know.
You mean a few weeks?
I simply could not do that.
Yeah.
Wow. If I spent weeks not knowing why I felt I'd sure be quite cross, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm. But I guess what I mean is that, like, there's lots of psychological quirks with emotions where we don't necessarily always know why we feel things. And that's what, like, therapy is we go, why do I feel this thing? And then why am I projecting this thing out onto the world? And so I don't necessarily think it's fair to say that anyone truly 100% knows where their emotions come from all the time.
See, that makes sense as to why I don't relate, because I won therapy. So, of course, I would. Of
Sorry.
Course.
The of red course. Flags in this room.
No, I swear, my therapist said to me, you've won. You've bested
that
me.
That means time for a new therapist.
That means your therapist.
Another one to win?
Your therapist gave up. You won. You won. Whatever. Just get out of my house.
Yeah, the worst thing is that it was online therapy. So, I mean, like, you know. I've got a quote from BBC Science Focus. It says, emotions are your brain's best guesses of what your bodily sensations mean, guided by your past experience. And I really like that explanation of emotions, right? Because it does feel like a sort of best guess of your body, right? Like, it's if you feel something, it's not necessarily like a one-to-one with what's happened. It's like you could feel happy from something happening that could make someone else feel sad, if that makes sense, right?
Yes.
Or like you could feel happy. No,
I know that one.
But what I mean is that, you know, what we were talking about already, that you can feel something and not immediately know what is causing that feeling, but that having that feeling can help you figure out something that's going on, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times it can be based on past experience. Like, you know, we've spoken about conditioning before, you know, being scared of something, being trained to be scared of something, right? Like that is a response that you develop over time because this thing has hurt me in the past or caused some kind of distress. And so I think, you know, this response will keep me away from it almost, right? Emotions are, you could see how emotions are a very useful sort of evolutionary tool for stopping dumb apes and other such things from dying.
I guess, yeah. That makes sense, scientifically.
I'm sorry, we're out of your depth there, aren't we, man? Like, happy? What is this? No, so emotions are very wide-ranging, but also very specific. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yes, so there's this wheel thing. Maybe you're going to bring this wheel up. But there's this wheel thing where...
Sorry, I know what you're talking about.
Is this CBT?
But it's really funny to think about, like, you're just talking about a big wheel.
Yeah.
There's a wheel. I don't know. It makes me feel good.
Someone found the emotion wheel. It was left there, I don't know, probably by the Egyptians or aliens, depending on how racist you are. And basically, it starts with, like, very broad categories of emotion, like sad or bad feeling or angry. And then it gets slightly more specific. Like if it's sad, it's like melancholy or like mourning or like, I don't know if there's specific.
Yeah, mourning is the saddest time of life.
So yeah, you have like broad strokes emotions and then you have like more and more specific emotions. And that's quite amazing when you think about, you know, if what Corey just said about it's kind of your brain's best guess of how your body's feeling. Your body is like, we might think of our body as being kind of like the dumb bit and our brain as being the smart bit, but your body's actually producing some quite specific and like sharp and precise feelings, and your brain is then sort of figuring those out and turning them into actions.
Interpreting, yeah. Yeah. Just to quickly jump back onto what you said, Noah, yes, that emotion wheel is used in CBT. So yeah. You might have seen this in CBT. It's, yeah, as Luke said, just sort of spreading out and getting more specific. Mm. But I really like what you're saying there about the body not being dumb and the brain not being smart. The brain is more just a processor and the body is very, very highly attuned to lots and lots of sort of inputs and outputs.
Yes.
It feels dumb because parts of our brain, there are parts of our brain that we don't necessarily control. You know, the sort of autonomic nervous system, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't control that. And so we think of it as kind of being dumb, you know, like blinking, breathing, the sort of like, oh, this, I see something that I cognitively know doesn't cause me any, like, present any danger, but my body is reacting to it with a fear response, lol, dumb body, but actually, smart body. Body able to pick up on signals.
Yeah. Before brain does.
Well, pick up on signals and be like, hey, you should be cautious of this. And brain is like, okay,
why?
Why?
But then I suppose sometimes outputs of body can be stupid because like you might have like bad feeling and it's an incredibly specific bad feeling, but your body's output still might be like, smash it.
You know, I know that
feeling,
one.
That feeling people get when they're like, oh, I'm seeing this really cute puppy and it's making me feel these things and I have this feeling of like, I want to crush it. I've read about that somewhere.
Acute aggression.
What,
yeah.
Like sociopath books?
Yeah, no.
Sociopaths?
You read the sociopath Bible, you sociopath?
Serial killer books? Is that what you want to be? Like, how to?
You get that in psycho school?
I don't think serial killers are, like, going around hurting cats because they think they're too cute.
No, definitely not.
How would you know that one of them hasn't done that, Luke, huh?
I don't know that one of them hasn't done that. Sure, you're right.
Thank you.
You win again. Once again, Corey winning.
I kind of want to be a bit more specific about the delineation of certain emotions, right? So some examples I've got in my notes are panic and fear. Those are two different things. Can you, Noah, perhaps describe the difference between panic and fear?
No, like I get it. I understand the difference. Explaining it would be I mean, panic is like your body is in like fight or flight mode, I assume. And fear is more just like, oh, I'm scared that something might happen, but you're not in a state where your body is like, oh God, I'm going to die. Whereas panic is like, oh God, like the body just takes over.
So I realized that presenting you that question was probably a silly thing because part of alexithymia is difficulty describing emotions. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry for that. But yeah, no, you're pretty spot on.
Yeah.
It's basically sort of a difference between sort of cognitive fear and like sort of body panic, let's say, right? Like you could be panicked about an irrational phobia, right? That is something that can cause you panic. But it's hard to have like cognitive fear over something that is irrational, right? Like it's more a sort of biological response and then you sort of have it going on in your brain, I find. Whereas with a sort of cognitive fear, let's say, of, oh, the world ending due to all of the stuff that's happening right now, that's a very rational fear that you can do nothing about. And so your brain just sits and works on it and makes you feel worse. You get me?
No, yeah. I don't have that. I think, oh, the world's going to end. Oh, yeah, sure, cool.
I think you just put it away.
There's I can't do anything about it.
There's a little box in your head where things that are overwhelming go.
Yeah.
And it's just, the world's ending.
Oops. My bad.
You could think of, in my notes, literally it says, or consider the huge family of hostile emotions akin to anger, rage, fury, hatred, resentment, contempt, loathing, and scorn, to name just a few. All of that is from Britannica, right? And all of those words are different words for anger, but they all have different connotations. All of the writers and the comments are like, oh, I know this. Finally, my English degree. I'm sorry. Basically, what I'm trying to get across here is that emotions are very wide-ranging, right? You've got happy and sad. Those are very different things. But within happy, there's lots of different happies that aren't necessarily the same thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, broad, wide-ranging, but also very, very specific. And they're studied amongst a huge number of disciplines. So there are lots of different perspectives to view emotions from. You know, you could look at them from the perspective of, say, marketing, wherein you're an evil person and you want to control people to make them buy things they don't need.
Oh, God. Can I just say here, by the way, I got absolutely doxxed on this podcast. Not doxxed in the sense of like my home address being given out, but I talked about my friend on the podcast who works in marketing, mm-hmm. and how I was talking to him about basically like what you're doing is just manipulating people into buying things they don't need. And then someone in my real life, my offline life, listened to the podcast and then told me and him in front of him, and I turned, oh God, it was just awful.
That's not a lot. This is a sacred space.
Yeah.
If we say something on here and you know the person it's about, no, you don't.
What happens in Side Guys stays in Side Guys.
Exactly.
The two universes should not cross over into my real life.
that's a breaking of trust. Shame on you.
How you say something publicly on the internet to thousands of people.
Yeah, it's like when I was
a
child.
It's between me and thousands of people, Noah. Not between me, thousands of people, and the person I'm talking about.
It's like when I was a child and I was like on the internet talking about being depressed but not telling my parents, and then being surprised when they found out.
How could this public post on the internet have possibly gotten back to anyone?
Unfriend me on Facebook, Mom. Stop reading my statuses.
But yeah, so the point being, emotions are studied across loads of different things. You know, you could look at biology and sort of psychology. You can look at loads of different areas and emotions come up. So it can be tempting to view emotions through each of those sort of specific viewpoints. But I mean, from what I've read, it's actually potentially more useful to look at it as a more sort of combined thing rather than competing views, as a sort of looking at it more holistically, right? Taking all of these different perspectives and sort of combining them into one big, messy concept of emotions.
Yeah.
So you're saying that like we shouldn't like rely too heavily on one of these specific things, and we should use all these different lenses to observe emotions as opposed to getting stuck in one way of thinking.
Yeah. Basically, don't look at emotions as being, oh, it's just a purely biological thing, because there's also, you know, social aspects to it as well. There are lots of different aspects to emotions, and sort of believing that we can hammer down what they truly are from one single discipline is maybe a bit misguided. So that is emotions. Are we all happy with those? Happy
I'm not
is
sure.
when good feeling.
I have no response to that.
So, my dear friends, what is alexithymia? Do not say alexithymia, the song by Noah Fince on the album Growing Up on the Internet.
It's the inability to understand emotions.
Yeah. It's a bit more than that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is one aspect of alexithymia. So it literally comes from the Greek. It literally means lack of words for emotion. It comes from the Greek.
Oh.
And yeah, I mean, there are sort of four characteristics I've kind of found that I say I've found, people have found, and I am now repeating back to you. So those four characteristics would be difficulty identifying feelings and distinguishing between feelings and bodily sensations and emotional arousal. Difficulty describing feelings to other people, reduced capacity to fantasize and to imagine, stimulus-bound, externally-oriented cognitive style. Do you know what that last one means?
No.
Stimulus-bound, externally-oriented cognitive style.
Oh, is that like how, it could be completely wrong, like when I can't figure out how I'm feeling, I just look at the context of it. I'm like, I'll logic myself into understanding my emotions. I'm like, well, I feel bad in my body. Let's look at what happened and try and figure it out retrospectively rather than actually feeling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I do that.
Slay.
Given the context, I must be feeling like this.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So it'd be looking at external factors and cognitively working things out rather than a more sort of internal approach where I would look into myself and think, what am I feeling? And then I would figure out what's going on.
Sometimes
from
I'm
there.
Like, if I was a character in a script I was writing and I had experienced these things, how would I feel?
Dude, this is why when
Jesus,
when we make music videos and we're like shooting a scene, I'm like, Luke, how am I feeling? What is the look on my face supposed to look like based on what is happening in the music video? You're like, maybe happy or sad or maybe an in between. I'm like, okay, cool. I can understand that now.
Yeah. Well, it was really interesting getting to learn how to direct you because you don't have any knowledge of what your face is doing your face ought to be doing at any point. But you are actually getting very good at it. Like your natural automatic thing is very good, even if you still don't know what you're doing.
It's because I look in the mirror.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay, so this is that face.
Literally, if you're doing anything with Noah, if you're filming him, he needs to see what is on the screen, and if he can't see it whilst it's being filmed, he wants to look at it every single time he's finished a take. Mm-hmm. Not that that's a bad thing or anything. Like, a lot of people do want to see it afterwards. And that's perfectly fine. But I feel like in a lot of cases, it's because you're like, I have no idea what my face looked like, and I need to visually. Also, when it comes to listening back to like voice notes you send, you don't know how you've said it. Like, he listens back to everything
he
sends.
I do that as well. I literally record a voice note and then I listen to the whole thing from beginning to end to go, did I come across how I wanted to come across?
Yes.
And then Rebecca's like, why do you do that?
I listen back to it and I'm like, if I was somebody else listening to this, how would I perceive it?
Yeah, exactly. And I've also been told I use emojis far too much because I'm trying to like clarify my tone.
Yes,
but
too.
It comes across like super disingenuous, but I'm just trying to be like, every single sentence needs a tone clarifying emoji. Yes.
I wrote that in my autism diagnosis. The question was like, how do you prefer to communicate? And I'm like, obviously on text, because I can't pick up tone over the phone, but also I love emojis, because then there's no way for people to misinterpret it.
Yeah, they still do, but they still do.
They do.
They still do. They just think I'm being really like disingenuous or manipulative with my emojis. I'm like, I'm just trying to clarify that I'm smiling.
Yes, yes.
This guy. Corey's looking.
I'm baffled, man. Like,
the funniest thing as well about this is that Corey is literally physically in the studio, sat between Noah and I. So this is coming from him at both angles.
It's interesting because you guys are, to put it, let's say bluntly, weird in a lot of the same ways. But you also present quite differently, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah.
You don't come across as being sort of internally similar. But
yeah.
You are both. Yes. Yeah. I spend too much time with both of you. Jesus, man. That's Alex Athymia.
Oh, thanks for diagnosing me, Dr. Corey.
Well, this is the thing. It's not necessarily a diagnosis because it is kind of viewed as a personality trait, right? It can be subclinical. Do we know what I mean by subclinical?
You have it, but it's not enough for it to like pass some kind of threshold to be like an official diagnosable thing.
Yeah, basically. It's not something that would be diagnosed medically because it's not inherently a sort of medical problem, right? Mm. In the same sense as feeling anxious or being a generally kind of more anxious person isn't inherently a medical issue. But if you've got generalized anxiety disorder, you know, anxiety, being an anxious person to the point of it being detrimental to your health, that would be clinical.
I found out the other day that one of my friends is what's called medically sensitive, which I just thought was really...
That sounds so funny. That'd be a really hard thing to not bully someone about.
Oh, you know what I mean? Yeah.
No, but like, it sounds like, oh, medically, I'm just soft uwu, you know?
I think it's a sensory processing disorder.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of... Like, I don't think it necessarily is in this category, but kind of feels a little bit anxiety and also kind of like almost like a medical term for what would sometimes they would describe themselves as, like, I'm an empath.
Yeah.
But like, they just feel stuff super, like acutely, like they really quickly feel things and they feel them extremely strongly, and that's like medically diagnosed, which I thought was really interesting.
Is it like the hypersensitive person, like HSPs?
I don't know that. I just know that it's called medically sensitive. Okay, literally.
That's what my old therapist tried to tell me I was when I was like, I think I'm autistic. He's like, no, you're just sensitive. You just feel things very strongly all the time.
You feel things very strongly and you also don't know what you're feeling.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like being in a sort of natural disaster and not knowing whether, is this an earthquake, a tornado, or a tsunami? Like,
or is that just a train going by?
Who knows? I don't know. I feel the rumbling. But yeah. No, so, you know, alexithymia, it doesn't necessarily need to be a disorder or part of a disorder. It can just kind of be a personality trait. Now, apparently, 10% of the general population could sort of be described as having alexithymia. Mm. I've also seen about 5%. The numbers vary. We don't have great numbers on it. We also don't necessarily know sort of the causes all too well, or even the effects of culture on the phenomenon. There's not a huge amount of study on this. I mean, it's was first described in 1948, which is, you know, a lot earlier than I would have expected, but in the grand scheme of things, not too long ago, right? Not even 100 years of study we could have had on this. It was first given its name in 1972, which is even more recent. That's more in line with what I would have expected. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, it's probably been quite seriously studied since about the 70s. But even then, we don't have huge amounts of data on it.
Yeah, it's interesting when you said we don't know about the effects of culture on alexithymia, because it's almost like you could make an argument that, like, a lot of men have something similar to this.
Oh, yeah.
In that, like, they don't necessarily know how they're feeling. And when they do feel something, they sort of crush it down and sort of have an idea that, like, feeling things, especially feeling sort of sad feelings, that's not manly. And so it means that you don't sort of practice the experience, the ability to name and sort of validate your own feelings.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I have nothing really to add to that, but I find it very interesting. I'm like, if you're told your entire life, don't talk about your feelings, just like man up.
Without, you just don't practice.
You're out of practice. Yeah, exactly.
I would like to kind of draw a bit of a line between that and alexithymia, because what you're saying is absolutely true, yes. But from what I've kind of read, normally distributed between both genders, right? So there's no strong sort of preference for one gender. I have seen that it's potentially more common in men with lower education than the general population. But alexithymia is kind of more consistent over sort of time, right? So what you're kind of describing there would be kind of pure emotional intelligence more than anything, right? It's men not sort of learning how to understand their emotions. It's not an innate sort of inability to understand their emotions or a deficit in sort of regulating or understanding the feelings or being able to describe those feelings. It's more a lack of practice, right? So someone who, you know, has, say, some kind of muscular disorder that makes it difficult for them to run would not be described in the same sort of category as someone who finds it difficult to run because they're not doing it.
Yes.
They're out of practice.
So to be clear, what I meant was that on the outside, they might seem similar.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And actually, it would be interesting to get some clarity from you here just on alexithymia. I do not think this is what alexithymia is literally, but what I am understanding it to be is almost like your brain doesn't receive the signals or can't interpret the signals that are coming from your body correctly. Not that that's literally why it's happening, but that's sort of what it feels like, rather than just not having the vocabulary to describe your emotions. So my point being, you could have alexithymia and learn that entire alien/Egyptian emotion wheel and still have the stupid thing that I described earlier as being like the Egyptians left this wheel of emotions on the earth. You could get all of that language, like completely understand every single different shade of sad, every single shade of happy, every single shade of excited, and have all that vocabulary and still not be able to correctly receive or interpret the signals that are coming from your body. Is that correct?
Yes, broadly. The specifics I'm not going to make a single bloody comment on, Luke, because as you probably know by now, we don't know a lot about how the brain works.
Yes.
And I don't want to, and I am not a sort of neuroscientist, so I don't want to say it's the brain struggling to interpret the signals properly. Probably something to do with that, right? Probably. But I don't know enough about brains. I'm not a brain science man. I'm just a guy.
Yes.
Who's sitting here telling you stuff. But yes, Luke, yeah, I would say that's broadly true, right? For example, I've got two people sat with me, one of whom his job is directing films and taking emotions of characters, displaying them in a visual medium. He's probably quite good at understanding, you know, emotions sort of with his cognitive sort of
intelligence. Yeah,
theoretically,
yeah.
So he has all of those descriptors and he understands how to present those on a screen and make people feel those emotions. That doesn't mean he understands them in himself. And someone else that's sitting next to me, his job is writing music to connect with people emotionally, which means he's probably got a decent understanding of how to convey emotions through music and how to take emotions and describe them artistically, you know, in songs. That doesn't mean he understands his emotions at
all.
That's
not my job. My job is to write about my feelings.
That is literally what I just said.
No, you said it's to connect with people. I'm like, nope.
I think you're splitting hairs here. I think it's interesting that the two of us...
No, I don't connect with anyone. I write just for me. My songs are for no one else. No one download. No one download his album. No one.
It's almost like you and I have like reverse engineered emotional understanding.
Yes.
And then that's made us like quite conscious of emotions, like as in conscious of them theoretically.
Yeah.
And then we've both gone into fields in which that like that conscious understanding of emotion is quite important, mm-hmm. even though our like intuitive understanding is not necessarily all there.
Well, it's interesting because like in terms of like writing music, it literally is like logically going back and being like, how did I feel about that? And how do I write that down? It's more like therapy where like people are dragging the emotions out of me and like helping me understand them than actually going in and be like, let's talk about my feelings.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting because you're both really making me feel good about the sort of research I've done and the notes I've got because you're kind of hitting on points that I plan to bring up. So
cool.
Do either of you know what interoception is?
Yeah.
Is it the one where like it's how you, your awareness in a space?
So that's proprioception.
Ah, so interoception is awareness within yourself.
In your own body.
Yeah.
Your own body? Your ability to like recognize the feelings inside your body or like what's going on inside your body.
Yeah. So like hunger. So for example, do you know how neither of you actually know when you're hungry? You just eat
until you start shaking.
Scheduled times or when you physically notice your body displaying hunger.
Yeah, like I can't think anymore. And I'm
Yeah, or how you carry a bottle of food with you at all times just so you can eat so that you have food to eat.
Like it's like an IV drip.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah, and do you know how you don't understand when you're hungry and have to use the external signals for that?
Until it's too late and then I'm angry.
But he wouldn't know. So that would come down to sort of poor interoception, but then it could also extend to not being able to, you know, feel your feelings, or not feel your feelings, but like understand your feelings. So I mean, you know, stop me if this is something you've experienced before. Have you ever sort of noticed after the fact that you're acting in a way or doing things that that would be sort of indicative of a certain emotion, and then after that realizing, oh wait, I'm feeling something, you know, like I'm feeling this feeling, like I'm feeling angry or I'm feeling sad, but until, you know, noticing external signals of that, you weren't aware that that's what was going on with you?
Yes. That's why, like, if I have any conflict with anybody, I'm like, I need to leave and then sit with myself for 20 minutes and, like, try and assess, like, what it is that I'm feeling.
I have noticed with you before that, like, sometimes I feel like I'm more hot on what you're feeling than you are.
Or all the time, yeah.
Like, we've gone to film videos before where I'm like, yeah, no, I don't think you should do this. And he's like, no, I'm fine. And then we film it and you're, like, tired and you're not, like, up for it. And I'm like, yeah, let's do this another time, I think, because I don't think you're able to do it right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, yeah, no, like you just don't necessarily notice the internal stuff. But there are feelings going on there, right? Like, it's not like you're hiding those feelings either. Like, those feelings could be painfully obvious to the people around you. Mm-hmm. Like, you're maybe the last one to be in on the joke or in the know, let's say.
Yeah. There's another song about that on the album.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
It is, and this time it's ringing for Incogni, who are sponsoring the show this week.
Luke, pray tell, What is it, Incogni?
So let me tell you a story. There's all these naughty people on the internet who like to scrape your data. They drag your data in, they collect it like a little spider, and they sell it to people who want to do things to you sometimes.
But that data, it is for me. It is about me. It is my data.
These naughty boys don't care about that. They might be selling this information to people who decide whether you can get a loan, who decide whether you get insurance for something, who want to market things to you.
I hate being marketed to. I refuse to be advertised to, and you know that.
Even more seriously, it can also end up in the hands of scammers, people who will call you up out of nowhere, people who will try and steal your identity, take out loans in your name. This is not a good time.
It's not. My identity is bad enough with just me using it. I don't need anyone else getting their grubby little mitts on it.
The good news is that you can contact these data brokers and you can say, "Stop, sir, stop doing that and delete everything you have on me." But that's very difficult. There's a lot of them, and you might not even know where to go.
That's true, Luke. I don't even know what a data broker is.
Well, guess who does know what a data broker is?
You do?
Incogni!
So, Luke, are you telling me that Incogni can do all of this hard work for me? Contact those data brokers and say, hands off of Corey's stuff.
Exactly. Incogni know who to contact, what they need to file in order to get these guys to stop collecting data on you and to delete what they already have. And they also show you how risky each of these data brokers might be. So in my case, I've done this.
You've broke data? Luke, you naughty boy.
No, my data was broke by somebody else. So I can see on my dashboard that Incogni have sent 43 requests to different data brokers for me on my behalf. I didn't have to do anything. There's 15 still going and there's 28 that have been completed, which means that they've either removed my data or they've agreed to stop collecting in the future, which I think is very nice because I get so many spam calls and I have no idea where they get my number from. It might be from this.
So you're telling me that Incogni are going to stop me from giving your number to random people I meet on the street?
No, Corey, that's a personal issue. We need to fight it out between us for that one. But for everybody else, for all these other naughty boys that aren't Corey, Incogni can help with this. So you can go to incogni.com/SciGuys and you can get 60% off the service. Get these data brokers out of your life. Get your life a little bit safer and hopefully not have these creepy little men sneaking around in your details.
Luke, you must be joking me. Are you telling me that if I go to incogni.com/SciGuys, I can get 60% off my annual subscription to Incogni?
That's exactly what I'm telling you. I'm telling you exactly what you just said.
Thanks, Incogni.
Yeah, thank you very much to Incogni for sponsoring the show. And let's get back to the podcast.
I want to talk about Incogni some more.
No.
Okay. So as I said earlier, there could be more studies on alexithymia. And Noah, I kind of wanted to ask you, you know, you've written a song about this. Where did you find out about alexithymia?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've like, been thinking I'm autistic for the past like 2 years. So I guess I was just Googling a lot about that. I don't really remember. I think I would have had a little one of my meltdowns and been like, why do I not understand how I feel? Help. I feel bad, but don't know what it is or if it is bad. I think a lot of it is just like questioning my experience. Because as I said, I have to logic myself into understanding myself. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the times when I am explaining my feelings or trying to explain them, I'm also like doubting that that is the case. Because like I'm working purely by logic. Like obviously in some cases I'm like, oh, this thing that would upset somebody has upset me and that's easy to feel that. But most of the time I'll just be working backwards. So I think I was more and more aware that I was doing that and that probably wasn't normal because most people can understand why they feel a certain way. So I just Googled it and I think that word came up and it was linked to autism and I was like, oh God, every time I Google anything, it's like you're autistic. I
wonder what that means.
Yeah, I know. I'm a third diagnosed and after this, I will be two-thirds diagnosed.
How many songs do you need to write about being autistic before they diagnose you with autism?
There's currently 4.
All on that album, right?
Yeah. I think the trouble as well, the hard part about this is that like using logic purely to figure out an emotion, well, firstly, sometimes emotions aren't logical.
Yeah, exactly.
Although you might be able to logic yourself to them. Mm-hmm. But also that, you know, I have friends sometimes where like if we're trying to make a deal between us or like trying to structure how a project's going to work, whatever, sometimes they like I've put to them how I would structure it or they've put to me how I would structure it. And one of us has like, oh, I have a feeling, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling like there's something that's unfair in this deal, but neither of us know what it is.
Yeah.
And then we eventually get to it, but it takes like it takes like 30 minutes to eventually go, oh, right, I have this one specific example with someone I know where like they had a feeling and it took us about half an hour and eventually it was like, oh, wow, that's such like a specific edge case that if this happens and this happens, then in this way you're not like looked after.
Yeah.
But and that's so precise and it's so amazing that some part of your body picked up on that incredibly specific thing.
Yeah.
But it took us ages to get there. So I guess that's the trouble with logicking your emotions as well, is that, it can take absolutely forever and you might just give up.
Oh, it might.
Yeah.
But maybe that's possible.
Well, I mean, like, a gut feeling, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's the thing. I think being able to understand what a feeling is really important, right? I say really important, but like really, really helpful. So for example, if I feel something, I know what I'm feeling, right? But I don't necessarily know what has caused that feeling. So I would then maybe logic out like, okay, what's causing me to feel this way? It isn't very difficult usually. It's like, I'm mad at Luke. Why am I mad at Luke? Well, he did this and this and this. And I'm like, right, but why does that make me mad? Like, I, you know, try to pull apart. Like, okay, but why has that made me angry? And that could be a way of like sort of working through those feelings. But then inherently, I would need to know initially, I'm mad at Luke. I can't just be like, I have feeling. Luke is involved. Ah!
I feel like that's interesting because like when somebody like does something that upsets me, because the way that I think about emotions and have to logic myself out of them, sometimes like somebody will upset me and I'll be like, oh, well, that's an illogical way to feel. Like I'll logic my way into understanding it and then come to the conclusion that it's illogical. And then just let that pass. And
if
then
we logic
kind of
our
thing,
way into this, we can logic our way out of it.
No. Yeah, but no. but then obviously because a feelings aren't necessarily logical, that just means that I will like build up that emotion, not really understand it, and then it will just get worse.
Yeah, if I can sort of, I mean, dox you a little bit here, you do tend to do this thing where you kind of switch off to a feeling.
Yeah.
You're like, no, I don't feel it anymore because it would be silly to feel this anymore.
Well, I also have emotional impermanence.
Yes.
So a lot of the time I'm just like, I could not even pick out that emotion that I was feeling if I tried.
Yeah, but as soon as that sort of situation presents itself again, you're like, feeling is back, right?
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You convince yourself almost that, well, yeah, I'm fine with this. I'm over this. Why is everyone still stressed about this when I'm over it?
Yeah.
And then, it's in your face again. You're like, I'm over it, definitely.
Oh,
but I feel bad and I don't know why, but I'm definitely over this thing that I'm certainly over. You know what I mean? Like, it's really interesting, right? Because that's another thing I was going to bring up, which is, you know, you might think, oh, being blind to one's own emotions, cool. That means that I can't experience a bad thing ever. Oh, no. Mm. Actually, the rates of anxiety and depression are higher amongst, you know, those who experience alexithymia. I've got some exact numbers, but they're somewhere in my notes and I can't find them. I'll run through some other things, though. You've got 40 to 60% of alexithymia among people with psychosomatic disorders and mental health disorders like anxiety. There we go. Found them. Which is 13 to 58%. Depressive disorders, 32 to 51%. Eating disorders, 24 to 77%. Addictive disorder, 30 to 50%, obsessive compulsive disorders, that's OCD, 11 to 36%, and autism, 40 to 60%. So all of those numbers are the sort of rates of alexithymia amongst those groups, and as you can see, it's pretty overrepresented if we look at the general population as being let's say roughly between 5-10%, going from 40 to 60, you know, with people that have got sort of psychosomatic disorders and mental health disorders, right? That's a pretty massive jump, right?
Yeah.
Does this also have anything to do with like the idea of like not trusting your gut as well? Like, I remember reading something about how like if a child is raised in an environment where their emotions are not validated, or whether the emotions of the parent are often blamed on the child, then the child like learns to not trust their gut. And to just sort of ignore signals coming from that part of the body, which I suppose might, it almost sounds like what you're describing, Noah, about like having a feeling, but you think it's illogical. And so you just go, right, so go away feeling.
Yeah.
Whereas actually there might be like a different, just because you haven't logicked your way to describing why a feeling makes sense.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that it is illogical. You just might not have found the logic yet.
Yes.
I think I find that there's, I feel there's a slight difference there because, you know, I don't want to speak for Noah, but I will, and I'm going to, and I will actually enjoy it, and I do want to, in fact. So I think it comes, like, that almost feels like it comes more from a stubbornness, and I don't want to use that word negatively. I mean it very neutrally.
Slash pause.
No, slash newt. Like a little newt. No, I do mean it very neutrally, like almost a stubbornness of, I don't want to feel this, and so no, I'm not feeling it because it doesn't make logical sense. And if it doesn't make logical sense, then I refuse, rather than a sort of conditioned response of, like, you know, oh, when I've felt this feeling before, this is the response I've gotten, and so this feeling can't be trusted. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like those are different sort of pathways almost.
Yeah, I think it's difficult because, like, obviously...
You don't know how you feel. I don't know.
My day. No, I think it's difficult because, like, obviously you said, like, emotions don't have to be logical. And even if an emotion you're feeling is illogical, that doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, obviously that helps, which is also annoying. It's really annoying when you can't really recognize what those emotions are. And when you finally come to terms with it, you're like, oh, that's illogical. And then there's the extra step of being like, just because it's illogical doesn't mean it's not real.
Yeah, man. And can I just say, getting Noah to the point of, like, not only being able to talk about feelings, but also after getting him to that point, having him accept that talking about feelings does, in fact, make him feel better, was a tough one. Because, like, obviously in the moment, talking about feelings, it can feel bad to do it. Like, it can be difficult. And so I think what was going... Yeah, uncomfortable.
Well,
I think
that,
what was going on with you...
It feels silly.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Because I don't... I feel them, but I don't, like, feel them.
Sincerity is cringe, blah, whatever. Yeah, but yeah. No, like, right? Like, I get it. It's embarrassing, maybe. It's uncomfortable. But ultimately, you know, after the fact... it does feel better. And I think especially if you've got that sort of emotional blindness and emotional impermanence, wherein, you know, once you do feel better, you kind of forget that you feel better, or you forget even the process, the emotional process that got you there. Mm. So you could be like, yeah, I don't need to talk about my emotions because that always makes me feel worse in the moment and then better forever after.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, but I'm glad we've got this on video. So if ever anyone, you know, who's in this room and is named Noah Fince is saying, I don't want to talk about my feelings, you know, maybe they could just look at this video and
I'll report the video. I get it taken down.
Noah looked at me with, like, some genuine rage there. I was like, actually,
but
a little bit scared.
He didn't know he was feeling that.
But yeah, let's talk maybe a little bit about emotional regulation, right? Because emotional dysregulation is also quite common amongst those who experience alexithymia, right? Several studies, this is a quote from a paper that's linked below, of course. Several studies have found impaired emotion regulation abilities in individuals with elevated alexithymia. Correspondingly, alexithymia has been found to have a negative impact on outcomes of therapy for anxiety and mood disorders. You know, so, I mean, obviously, right, therapy is going to be harder if it kind of relies on the person that's being therapized having at least some understanding of their feelings or ability to describe their feelings. Because a therapist, you know, one of a therapist's jobs is to, you know, help you work through your feelings. And if you're sitting talking to a therapist completely, like, unable, incapable of describing
so
how you
why
feel.
It didn't work.
I hate that because, like, he'd be like, and how does that make you feel? And I'm like,
I don't know.
That's what you're supposed to tell
please,
me.
Like, please, like, I don't know. Like, get it out of me. Like, I can't, you can't just sit and nod and
you
be
want
like,
an exorcism.
I want an exorcism. Yeah.
Emotional exorcism. Cut it out of me.
That would be sick.
I mean, that's literally what your song's about.
Yeah, I guess. Oh, yeah, no, it is.
I love that you're telling him what his song is about.
I've been planning the music video this morning. So.
Classic. But I do think it's really interesting because for me personally, what I would get out of therapy is not, you know, what am I feeling? It's more validation of feelings or, like, invalidate my feelings for me, right? Like, am I being, tell me I'm being irrational. That's I just need that validation almost of, like, this is irrational, get over it, right? Or... Well, no.
Classic therapy.
But that's what Noah said. That's what Noah said, is that his feelings are irrational and he just needs, he tells himself to get over them.
Right. But what I mean is, instead of dwelling on a feeling, being like, being able to let go of it, right? Like, this is like you're able to let go of something. I think that's different from ignoring the feeling. There's, you know, recognizing the feeling, feeling the feeling, and letting it go. Whereas I feel like the recognizing the feeling is maybe a bit more difficult for some people in the room.
And the feeling
may be a bit more difficult. The letting it go is also difficult. Basically, you're just putting a big sheet over it and pretending the elephant is no longer in the room. We just have a spooky ghost that no one can see.
Anyone see an elephant? I don't.
No, I crushed up against the wall. Like,
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't see any elephant around here. Oh, sorry, excuse me. I've got a very rumbly tummy.
What could that possibly mean?
Yeah, it can, you know, it can increase your sort of, I say increase your chances. I don't actually know that, but it can have, it can have negative outcomes when paired with sort of anxiety and depression when it comes to therapy, let's say, because you're not really able to necessarily get the full benefits of therapy as easily as another person might, right? Because you're struggling to do some of the very basic things that therapy sort of rests itself upon, describing your feelings to a person so that they can help you understand what's going on and feel better about it, right? And if you don't know what you're feeling or aren't able to describe it, if you do know, then that's going to put barriers in place there, obviously. So we've kind of gone through a lot of different things when it comes to alexithymia. Is there anything that you guys want to touch on or talk about at all?
It feels like the kind of thing that a lot of therapists wouldn't be set up to deal with, because it's a very small amount of the population, even if it's like 10%. Like it feels like, especially, sorry, maybe not therapists, maybe not like fully like licensed therapists, but one of the things you get on the NHS a lot of the time is just like counseling. Mm-hmm. And that's a shorter amount of time to train for. And it feels like it might not be like, if you're catering to the majority with your counseling training, you might not have an awful lot of time spent on how to deal with like a small amount of the population who can't explain their emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, although I would say, bear in mind that this is a sort of sliding scale personality trait. I don't know if I've actually mentioned that explicitly, but I'll say it now. We can kind of view it as a sort of sliding scale, right? There's people who, you know, kind of experience very little alexithymia and then those who experience more. And then obviously you get to sort of more sort of clinical levels. But again, there's not really a sort of clinical diagnosis of this. There's no... It exists in the literature, right? The concept of alexithymia definitely exists in the literature, but there's debate about whether it's its own thing, because it can be very strongly linked to depression. But I mean, from what I've read, not an expert, obviously, and from listening to the sort of testimony of autistic people, I think it is useful to view it as not necessarily a symptom, but a sort of presentation or experience in itself, right? Like, and I think that's the main thing when it comes to cases like this. Is it a useful description? And I think alexithymia is a useful description.
I guess what I'm getting at is that I've tried different therapies in the past and not a single person has ever mentioned this to me.
Despite
the fact that I have in therapy / counseling struggled to explain how I feel or how something made me feel. And only when Noah started talking about it did I ever hear about this.
Fair. So, I mean, what I was thinking was more sort of, I imagine, you know, therapists and maybe some counselors would be able to help someone work out what they're feeling. Because it isn't abnormal to not know what you're feeling about something, right? Or to be ignoring one's own feelings. I think maybe when it's a more holistic thing rather than a sort of very acute situation, right? When it's a case of like, I just generally struggle to understand, experience, describe my emotions, my sort of physical body sensations. I mean, this could even present as like, you know, not knowing when you're aroused, right? Like being horny, but like not knowing that you're all horned up, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Like your body's like, I'm raring to go. And you're like, what is this going on?
Why am I agitated?
But like, actually, though, right? So, you know, there's potentially a difference, let's say, between someone who in one scenario is like, I don't know how this situation has made me feel, right? Like, I'm feeling all sorts of stuff and I don't know what it is and I don't know why. that is something that could be, you know, that anyone could experience, right? But trying to sort of deal with that or treat that is, you know, kind of very different than, you know, dealing with something wherein someone just really struggles holistically to understand experience and describe their emotions, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not disagreeing with you at all, really. I just kind of want to clarify that while, you know, therapists and counselors may be able to help people with understanding emotions that they don't understand, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're, you know, equipped universally to help people who just generally, you know, don't understand their emotions.
I think I definitely agree with you, because the first therapist that I went to had no idea what I was talking about. And it's not that he had to know the word alexithymia, but like I was trying to explain, I was like, yeah, no, I just don't know how I feel. And he's like, well, and all he would do is like nod.
How does that make you feel?
Yeah, literally. And then I'd call up other therapists that even some of them had like autism as one of their, like, not their specialties, but something that they've like dealt with before. Not a big deal not knowing the word, but even then sometimes they're explaining back to me the opposite of what I was saying. So I definitely think it's like very specific. Obviously it's specific and it can be holistic, but like that specific feeling of like generally just like not understanding at all is like definitely an experience I've had where like some people, therapists just like don't get it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It just feels like an odd thing where like I think you could probably make the case that it would be a kind of reasonable suggestion that if this is 10% of the population, people with alexithymia might be overrepresented in people going to therapy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Because like you say, it's comorbid with so many other things. If you can't describe your emotions, then you may well end up in therapy because you need someone to help you describe your emotions. You might have got into situations which are complicated because you couldn't describe your emotions to somebody else. Mm. So it feels like the kind of thing that therapists and counselors, etc., should have in their vocabulary just to be able to go, oh, okay, like maybe this is a thing you're experiencing. And there may be like regulatory reasons they can't do that. I don't know. But even if they can just on a colloquial person-to-person level go, maybe you struggle to explain your emotions. Like that might be like a breakthrough for people. Like, again, if they're overrepresented, maybe 20% of all the people who end up in therapy might have that.
Yeah. And kind of to add to that, you know, I feel like if you are autistic and you're looking for therapy, please, for the love of God, find someone who is very specialized in, you know, therapy for autistic people. Because through sort of doing this podcast and just kind of being on the internet, you see a lot of autistic people talking about their experiences. And then I get this kind of, not necessarily unique experience, but it's something that not everyone kind of goes into, wherein I see autistic people talking about stuff on TikTok or in my house. And then I go and have to read about it, you know, the science behind it, and see how it's viewed academically or clinically. And it's really interesting seeing the wealth of experiences that autistic people have that are present in the literature, but not sort of, you know, necessarily as prominent as they should be. Right. So while alexithymia is something that, you know, a lot of autistic folk like talk about and discuss, and that is mentioned in the literature, that it's you know, very prevalent amongst autistic people, it's not something that I think is necessarily understood on a wide enough level. Yeah. That makes sense, right? You know, wherein everyone who's sort of, I don't want to say dealing with autistic people, but everyone who's providing any sort of support to autistic people, you know, it's not necessarily common knowledge amongst all of those groups, right? I mean, and I say that not from, to be clear, I say that not from looking at sort of data on it, but more sort of anecdotal of just seeing a bunch of autistic people be like, man, like, no one knows what's going on except for other autistic people. Like, that's why I was asking you, sort of, where did you find out about this? So when you looked sort of on the internet, were you finding things more from, say, medical websites, or were you finding things that are like, you know, sort of blogs or autism websites or support groups for, you know, I mean, autistic people?
Like, I would start on the medical websites, because that to me was just like, okay, well, there is an actual, like,
oh yeah,
like an actual, like, studied reason that this is a thing. But then I'd obviously just, like, I mean, like, Reddit Like, I would just type in, like, why do I not understand how I feel, Reddit, and it would come up with a bunch of, like, autism subreddits.
It's a good place to find autistic people.
It is, and, but it's way more helpful for me to hear stuff from other autistic people than it is from, like, neurotypical people trying to explain what the experience is.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just, like, the first time I heard, even with, like, ADHD or, like, anything, the first time I heard that other people were going through the exact same experience as me in their real life, it was so much more life-changing than just reading about it.
Yeah, I mean, from my experience sort of reading about ADHD, I find that people who have ADHD, studying ADHD, have a perspective that others don't, right? Yeah. Mm. And, you know, we talk about science being unbiased, like removing it from... It shouldn't matter who's studying this, right? It doesn't matter whether it's a white man or a black woman studying this this disease that is, you know, that only really affects black women. It shouldn't matter. But unfortunately, we are biased. We are, you know, we are flawed as beings. And so we can't eliminate all bias. And our perspectives also dictate like the questions that we ask. And fundamentally, when it comes to sort of, you know, a scientific study, what you're really doing is asking a question, right? You're asking a question and coming up with an answer that you think you're going to get and testing for that. And the questions that you ask are broadly controlled by your experience as a person. And so the questions that are asked by, say, an autistic person studying this sort of stuff, they're going to be, you know, probably a bit different than a neurotypical person wanting to study this sort of stuff, because an autistic person is coming from the experience of having autism. And so things that they innately are already aware of, a neurotypical person might not be aware of, right? Because from the outside, it can look very different than the internal experience. There are things missed, right? Like ADHD from the outside looks like, look, it's Bart Simpson jumping around all crazy, doing lots of blah 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 things. They're late all the time, but the internal experience is like, I don't want to be late. I just cannot not do that. Like, I'm struggling. Do you know what I mean? Like, the external and internal can be very different. And so it's very important when studying things like this, I think, to have people from those groups, you know, spearheading a lot of studies on these things.
Yeah, I think you also have the issue that, like, a neurotypical person in science has been told that they are the default prototypical human their entire life. And, you know, every being that is in existence at all will have some kind of biases. It's just that if you are part of the big group, your biases, you might even be blind to your own biases, and most people might be blind to your own biases because they are the default, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so if somebody else has a different way of thinking or a different set of biases that might not, in some cases, be worse, they're just different, you might see them as worse or like capable of being dismissed, when actually your own biases are just, you've just been told that they are fine biases to have, and other people's biases are weird biases to have.
So I think a really cool thing that we see in this is I feel like some research tries to characterize autistic people as being weird and different and inherently in some ways worse than sort of holistic people. And one of the ways that you see this is that a lot of autistic people have like maybe a strong sense of justice. Now that can present as, you know, an irrational sense of justice, right? Like a strong sense of justice doesn't mean you know, we have this sort of nebulous sort of, what's the word? Objective concept of justice. And autistic people manage to like align with it perfectly because of some, you know, extra dimension, whatever, right? No, it's not that. It's just that a lot of autistic people have like a moral code that they follow very, very strongly, right? And so your strong sense of justice can be generally conceived as being bad, right? But if you couple that sort of strong sort of sense of justice with the sort of empathy that you can see in a lot of autistic people, like feeling other people's feelings, not necessarily, you know, being able to like cognitively notice them or understand or whatever, but like feeling another person's feelings, right? You can see that like autistic people can be really empathetic and really helpful and all of these sorts of things, right? A lot of positive qualities. But you want to describe that as being different and weird. You don't want to be like autistic people are better at this thing than holistic people. And so it's described in a negative light almost, when fundamentally what they're describing is this group of people being sort of more altruistic on average than the general population, right? And you take that like pretty much objectively positive quality and be like, how can we spin this? Oh, they're so silly. They don't even know when they shouldn't be altruistic. That's what it is. That's the problem with autistic people, right? Am I right, guys?
No.
No, exactly. But that's kind of what happens, right? Like, am I making sense to you?
Yes. Yes, you're making sense. Thank you for making sense.
So before we wrap up, I just want to quickly talk a bit more specifically about alexithymia and autism. Obviously, that's what we've been doing for most of this episode, but there are a few things we've not really touched on that I just want to get out of the way before we go. You know, obviously it's very prevalent amongst autistic people, but apparently it's about 10 times the rate it could, like, you know, of the general population. So I think Whoa. That's maybe about 50% of autistic people would have sort of clinically significant alexithymia.
Ooh.
And that doesn't mean that, you know, only 50% of autistic people have alexithymia. That's clinically significant.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the other 50% could be, like, just, you know...
Everyone has a little drop of it.
yeah. And what's interesting here is that autism is heritable, right? Like, if you're autistic and, you know, your dad likes collecting planes and is very specific about which plate he uses or what temperature the house is in, or... Dear God, yeah, how things should be cleaned and loaded into the dishwasher.
Yeah, my dad doesn't let anybody tidy anything in his house because he's like, no, I'll do it. You'll do it wrong.
Then maybe they're autistic, right? Like, do you know what I mean? It's a heritable thing is the point. And that might also point to a somewhat genetic influence on alexithymia. Now, that's not to say that it is 100% genetic, but there might be some sort of genetic influence along with sort of, what's the word, environmental factors and developmental factors as well. They sort of looked at a whole bunch of genes. It was a genome-wide association study trying to find genes that were sort of linked to a risk of developing alexithymia. And I think they found a few candidate genes, like a few genes that might be related to that, right? But again, that doesn't mean, you know, in the same sense of a gay gene not existing, it doesn't mean, yes, this gene automatically causes this.
Yeah. It
could be a gene that makes, for some reason or another, you more susceptible or more likely to, you know, develop alexithymia. So we don't actually know the cause of it, is the point here. We don't know the exact cause. Could be genetic, it could be a whole big mess of things, probably that, right?
Yeah.
But ultimately, the takeaway here is that alexithymia is this sort of difficulty understanding, experiencing, and describing one's emotions, and can often lead to a more sort of external, cognitive, logical way of thinking to understand one's own feelings and, and sort of internal things going on in one's body. And that's pretty much all I've got for you guys today. That's alexithymia.
Oh, yeah.
It's just one thing left to do, though. It's a quick fire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Alexithymia edition.
So the rules for the quick fire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finish asks the question wins. What do you win, Luke?
An Egyptian in motion wheel.
So, Luke, what is your buzzer?
Alex.
And Noah, what is your buzzer?
Tori's buzzer is thymia.
Sure, okay. And my question for you is, what percentage of people experience alexithymia?
Alex!
Luke?
10%.
Ding, ding, ding! Yeah. That is correct. Well done, Luke. And thank you very much, Noah, for joining us. We've got to thank some of our new patrons, though, Luke, don't we?
We do, and I feel very happy about it, as far as I know.
A massive thank you to Ian Fraser-Reith.
Thank you to Gracie.
Thank you to Claudia Scarlett McKenzie.
Thank you, Aria Rapich. Slash Rapie.
Thank you, Cortina.
Thank you, CJ.
Thanks, Clumsy. Oh, no. Oh.
Thank you, Drapion Higgins.
Big ol' thanks to Gabby.
Thanks, Joshua Smith Franklin.
Oh, thank you, Caitlin Saunders.
And thank you to Charlotte Holt.
You say, and Luke, we're not done yet.
Ooh.
A big ol' thanks to Elijah Heminger. I didn't pronounce that right, but who cares? You probably do. Sorry. Thank you, Laja.
Thank you, Miranda Wedberg.
Thank you, Melissa Cruz.
Thank you to the Wizard in the Woods.
Thank you, Savant Guard. That's a pun. I like that.
Thank you, Timu Tonti.
Thank you, Scout.
And finally, thank you to Ashley Marvin.
Bloody hell, that was a lot of patrons to thank. Thank you very much, all you new patrons. And I think that's all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producer Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. you can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? You support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
You can follow me at NoOffence everywhere, apart from Twitter, where it's NoOffenceAdams, and TikTok, where it's TheNoOffence.
Bye.
Bye.
Growing up on the internet.
Very good.
Bye.
Do people buy songs anymore?
I don't know, man.
Just stream it.
Some of them do.
Just download it on torrent.
Just send them money.
Drop me a message. I'll send it for free.